This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and welcome to 2022, everyone. We are here and I'm here with my good colleague, Peter at Wheelie Dealer. Pete, hello there, mate.
That's me. Yeah, hello, mate. You're right.
So this is the podcast 66, first one of the year. So happy new year to all of our listeners, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to a new year, new investing, new stresses and strains, and let's see how we get on. Hopefully some of us will do a little bit better than we did last year, and some of us that did well will equally do well again in 2022. Wishing you all the very, very best. Pete, where do you want to start this podcast, mate?
Well, we always tend to start on the markets, don't we? And what's sort of going on in the bigger picture. So no reason why we shouldn't do that again. And just echo your earlier comments, really, that I hope everyone has a great year. And I feel myself relieved that 2021 is out of the way. From an investing, I mean, yeah, for other reasons, yeah. But from an investing perspective, it was getting really tedious in those last 3 months. And to come out with a reasonable result, I'm pretty happy, you know. So but I just got to get it done, crack on with 2022. That's, you know, got off to a choppy start already, but I think we're doing okay. So, yeah, pretty happy with it, really.
Yeah, we ended up quite fortunate in the sense of the actual Santa Rally ran as it's supposed to do. So 5 days before the new year and the first two trading days of the year. And we actually ended up having, not all of them positive, but we had the rally over those 7 trading days. And then we got into the new year and, you know, it started off a bit erratic. But today we've hit a new high, you know, a 52-week high. We finished at 7551, which takes us above the levels we were at from Feb the 1st, 2020. That's the highest we've been since Feb 2020, mate. So, you know, we get to Feb and we're above this level, give us a 2-year high.
Yeah, and we're recording this on Wednesday the 12th of January after the markets have shut.
So we finished at 7551 today, which is really, really good. Yeah. A new 52-week high. We stay above this level in Feb, as I say, will give us a 2-year high pre the March April crash of 2020 when we all got, you know, thrown in the bath, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. It's funny because I've been saying to quite a few people that I've often found with January that I seem to go into it for the first few days because of the Santa rally, whatever, doing okay and, you know, looking pretty good. And then it always sort of dips a little bit and then it tends to move on again. And we seem to be following exactly that pattern yet again. I mean, fingers crossed. Yes, it's shaping up all right, really.
I think it's that case of we might be climbing a whole wall of worries, Pete. That's my. I'm still cautious, mate, and the market's just
so
kept
many
on
worries.
Climbing,
so
it's not a case of I've called it wrong. I just chose to be cautious, and I took a bit off the table during December and a little bit, you know, so far regarding certain stocks. But what's really helped us push on has been Barclays. Anglo American, Lloyds, Rio, HSBC, BHP, Billiton, BP, Aviva, London Stock Exchange, and Royal Dutch Shell. They're all up plus 9% or more in the past month. You know, so that's really, really helped. The ones that have detracted from us were the ones that were laden with lots of shareholders. Scottish Mortgage, because all the tech stuff that was kicking off a little bit over the Christmas period, that's down 12%. We've had that recent noise about the cladding. So Barrett is down 6.8% in the FTSE 100. And Persimmon as well is down 6%. So that's been a bit of a detractor. But we're sitting here as high as we've been since Feb 2020. So the FTSE is doing okay despite, you know, those worries. So I'm quietly pleased with how the market has behaved so far. We've had a few profit warnings already, as a few stocks have been hit. And unfortunately, I think what's going to be happening, and it's, I mean, we saw that happening in the last 3 to 6 months of 2021, is that if a company who's a high growth company comes out and says, actually, growth has slowed a little bit, or we're having a little bit, or logistic costs have gone up, or FX has gone up, or whatever, market's just gone wallop. We're not having it. We don't want that. You can't be on a PE of 25 or 35 and saying you're not growing as fast as that wallop.
There's no forgiving at the moment. It's just not happening. There's another sort of quirk that's sort of happening. And I've read quite a lot about this in Investors Chronicle, because they quite often, a couple of them tend to write a similar thing quite often. And that's the idea that some years you get what they call a stock picker's market, where it's quite easy to beat the index. So the FTSE 100, yeah. Then you get other years where it's difficult to beat the FTSE 100. And we definitely had one of those years last year where FTSE 100 did well because some of the big weighted stocks did really well. So because the FTSE 100 did really well, if you were a stock picker in small caps and whatever, it was actually quite hard to even achieve what the FTSE 100 did. Whereas in other years, you can get the opposite situation where big FTSE 100 stocks don't do very well, and everything else relatively does do well. So it's actually quite an easy market. Does that make any sense?
No, I don't think it does. It makes sense, Pete. We had, in the end, the best sort of performance of the FTSE in 2021 since 2016.
Yeah.
That's how well it performed. And yeah. I think what happened was a lot of people moved to quality stocks, Pete, and the smaller ones that had been championed or had lots of smaller investors in that small investors loved the small caps. Yeah. Unfortunately, last year, a lot of the small caps got left behind. They got, you know, FX problems, as I mentioned before, logistic problems, and all that sort of incremental inflation has really impacted them a lot. They were impacted, I think, far more than the larger caps. I think the larger caps were able to pass on some of the costs to their, you know, to their clients, whereas the smaller ones possibly couldn't, or they had the stuff, you know, on ships and couldn't even get them into the UK.
Yeah, I wonder if a lot of it as well was good old-fashioned mean reversion. You know, it's just that so many of the big stocks, like your RDSBs, your HSBAs, your Stans, have been so beaten up that, you know, they were almost due a good time sort of thing. And I think there was a part of that going on. I'm really croaky today. I don't know what's going on. Bit more tea, that'll sort it out.
Get yourself a cup of tea. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're probably right there, P. I think the energy stuff that was kicking off as well in the last 3 months as well helped with the likes of Centrica, BP, Royal Dutch Shell, with their fuel prices going up and the gas prices going up, electric prices going up. Yeah. All the utilities helped. Most of them increased, didn't they, in the last 3 months of the year? So that helped the FTSE as well. So, yeah, I think this year, I think it's going to be another one of them wading through treacle years, mate. I'm not sure. There was people, you know, articles going out saying, oh, rock and roll, we're going to hit 8,000 in 2022. I hope we do. I think a lot of people's portfolios could do with the help.
I won't mind.
I'm hoping that it does well. But I'm not celebrating yet. I want us to get over the next resistance level on the FTSE 100, which is 7,674. That's the next biggie.
Right.
We're at 7,551 right now, the close today. That's only 100 and odd points away. So if we can get that, run our way, mate.
From memory, I think the all-time high is a little bit over 7,900. It's about 7,912, I think. We're not far off that. It sounds ridiculous.
We're not far off whatever it was, mate. And this is the beauty. You know, if you think about it now, we're sitting where we are at 7,51, right? That's, we're less than 4% ish away.
Yeah.
and that's it, bang. We've not.
It really is nothing. It really is.
It doesn't sound like much, and it shouldn't really be asking much. That's the FTSE to go up, you know, more than 5% in the course of a year. But, you know, you just, I'm not going to put my hat on it and go, yeah, that's going to definitely happen this year, because I don't know what's going to happen next. You know, and as you've touched on before we started this podcast, you know, Boris is hanging on in there by his fingernails. We don't know what he's going to say next, you know. So we don't know what's going to happen with this market, mate.
I can't see him lasting much longer, mate. As we talk tonight, I think he's, my expectation is that Boris will sort of be forced out or have to resign or whatever, but he'll hang around for a while, maybe to the autumn. So he'll be like a caretaker prime minister to get through the problems while they line up another leader and switch over. That's what I think is going to happen. That's guesswork, you know what I mean?
I don't know. As I said to you before, I don't like politics hanging over my investments, but it's part and parcel of the territory nowadays, isn't it?
It's a nightmare. I think the thing that we found with the Brexit stuff was that you got to watch the pound, and that when there's bad news, it tends to hit the pound. And perversely, the FTSE 100 seems to like that, but the smaller stuff, the FTSE 250 and the small caps and that, don't like that so much. That's what we seem to have found. So it's that pound you got to watch.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The quid in your pocket.
Yeah, because it's getting eroded by inflation. I saw talk about, you know, possibly going up to 7% and more. I'm like, it's going to start hurting people's pockets. And then we've got people's, you know, gas and electric bills going through the roof, you know. But so I think we're going to have the lower end of people's budgets being squeezed, and the rich are going to get richer, unfortunately.
Do you know, I was thinking about this the other day because we mentioned before the call about Games Workshop, yeah, and you know it had results this week, and from what you're telling me, it disappointed the market and whatever. What struck me about that was that if people's incomes get really squeezed, are they really going to be going out spending a hell of a lot of money on a Warhammer figurine of some sort? I don't know. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I think there could be a lot of these kind of things that have sort of done well, but may come under pressure because people just don't have the money.
People are going to prioritize, Pete, on staples, stuff that they must have. The people, especially the people that haven't got the spare cash.
Exactly.
People that invest in hobbies, they tend to invest in hobbies. They tend to continue to invest in hobbies.
Hobbies are quite sticky, aren't they?
Yeah, it's quite sticky. Yeah. I think what the Americans call it, and we put it in certain places, call it discretionaries. Discretionaries could be impacted. Of course they could. But, you know, you're still going to need your staples, which is, you know, your goods. You know, you're still going to have to eat.
You need your grub,
you're still
going
to have to buy, do your shopping. You might choose to stop shopping at Marks and Spencer's now and next, and choose to go to Aldi and Lidl and Netto or whatever it is. Yeah. But, you know, you're still going to have to, you know, warm your house and feed your family and yourself. So
exactly,
discretionaries could be impacted. But saying that, Pete, the stats that we saw for the end of the year, for the number of people that were buying Rolls Royces and Teslas and luxury cars and luxury goods, was going through the roof. So you see the big disparity between the rich and the poor, you know?
Do you know what? This is a subject that I've had on my, I've got my magic list. You know, here's my magic list of potential topics to discuss. And one I've had, a recurring one that we never talk about, is the idea of wealth inequality. And that it strikes me, we're in this situation globally where the difference between the poorest people and the wealthiest people is probably at one of the highest levels it's ever been. It's probably back to sort of 1920s Great Gatsby, you know, your flash Rolls Royce cars for the people who got the money, and everyone else, you know, hasn't even seen a car, you know, and they got a donkey if they're lucky, sort of thing. and the rich ones, you know, the relatively rich poor people have got donkeys, you know. So if you think about it, whenever there's been historically these big disparities in wealth, it's never ended well. Look at 1930, yeah, well, look at 1920s, look at 1930s. I just wonder if we're, not now, I don't think any of us need to worry today, but it makes you wonder if over the next 2-3 decades or something, is there going to be something goddamn seismic? I think it potentially could be.
I hope there's not going to be something seismic, Pete. I think there's going to come to a situation where, you know, we as communities and the politicians get involved, where they actually support the people and the communities that are, you know, that are stretched, that are financially, you know, on unstable ground. But we have not seen much of that in the past year and a half and such. I'm hoping we'll see more of it. And hopefully, you know, we're in a situation where we don't go into further lockdowns, mate, because more jobs will be lost, more people are going to be put on the scrap heap regarding jobs being cut and all the rest of it. So hopefully, Pete, this is a year where we actually transition away from the COVID conversation and the Omicron conversation and actually go back to people returning to work, returning to their offices at some point during this year. I'm fed up of it, to be fair. I want to get back to some sort of normal. I am, Pete. I just want to get back to
normal. I know the feeling.
Normal. Yeah, you know, I'm seeing
people feel the same.
I was on a Zoom call last night, and it was a good call. I'm actually on a conversation with the former captain of Leicester City Football, Wes Morgan, when they won the Premier League. I was on a conversation with him. There's people from all over the world, in Canada and America and Uganda and all over the place, you know, UK, and all the rest of it. And it was great. But I thought, wouldn't that have been great if I was in the room with Wes Morgan? All I could think about was I wanted to be in the room with him, you know, because he's a hero in Leicestershire, obviously, and around the world. He's a former captain of Jamaica, you know, and I just wanted to be in the room with him. It just wasn't the same, Pete. You know, I want to get back to being in a room, sharing a pint with people and going to restaurants and just
living your life.
Yeah.
I just think so many people feel the same way. I mean, it's funny because, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about Boris's problems and how he may or may not hang around much longer. But I don't think we can necessarily say he's achieved it, but somehow the UK...
I see where you're going there. Don't do that.
By osmosis or by some sort of amazing miracle, the UK has got itself into a position where it probably is as advanced as any advanced country in terms of getting out of this COVID problem. You know, well, I've heard things like, you know, in the G7, we've got the fastest growth of all of them. So, you know...
Yes, I heard that.
You know, and a lot of the policies that have been adopted, rightly or wrongly, have led us to a situation where economically and that we're looking reasonably good shape compared to what we could have been. Obviously, government debt is absolutely blinking ridiculous, and that could be a problem if interest rates keep going up, which it looks like they might. And obviously, we've got inflation problems, blah, blah, blah. But everyone's got those compared to everyone else. We're probably looking better than most. Which is interesting because I'm picking up a lot, and it may or may not be true, but if you read it in enough places, it probably becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. That people keep saying the UK market is relatively cheap. And I think if you look at PE ratios and dividend yields and stuff like that, it's a good case to be made that it is relatively cheap, you know, compared to the US market, which is just still bonkers, really. And, you know, maybe that's going to help put a tailwind behind a FTSE 100 and behind a FTSE 250 and whatever. But as you said before, as you implied before, I think there is going to be a lot more discretion from buyers of stock. So I think last year, running up to sort of March time, you could buy any old junk and it just didn't matter. It went up and then it got a bit harder, and I think we're in this a bit harder stage. I think it's gonna separate out the, you know, the goats from the sheep, you know.
I've seen the articles as well, Pete, saying that the FTSE is cheap. It's been that way for a little while. As I was saying to you before, it had its best year since 2016. So, you know, all that Brexit stuff hopefully is going to be less of a drag going forward. Obviously, we had loads of stuff going on regarding M&A during that year as well. Globally, there was, the value of M&A globally topped $5 trillion, Pete, for the first time ever. So that's really, really going some. And we still managed to underperform most of the markets, even though it was our best year since 2016. So I'm just rush these stats out to you, Pete. So 2021, right, S&P 500 rose 26.9%. Okay. NASDAQ, 21.4%. Dow Jones, 18.7%, or there or thereabouts when I last looked at the numbers. Russell 2000, 13.7%, right? The CAC,
Russell 2000, US small caps.
US small caps, yeah. 13.7. The CAC, plus 29%. That's almost double what the FTSE 100 did, okay? Stock 600, European, or blah, 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 600, plus 22, and the DAX, 16%. Yeah, so we still underperformed most people.
What did the UK FTSE 100 do?
14.3.
Plus dividends, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so probably about 18 with your dividends and stuff. Wow.
We've got room for improvement, Pete, and I'm hoping we will get there over the next couple of months. There's going to be a few tribulations as well, because everyone's worried about whether or not the American markets are going to roll over because they've been on such a tear, you know, and the tech stocks have been on such a, you know, Apple, Amazon, Tesla, you know, absolutely been on fire last year. If they roll over, they'll take us with them and we're back to square one, you know, we're back to 7,000 again, rather than looking at 8,000.
Do you know, I keep thinking with the NASDAQ, and again, it's just my hunches, so it probably don't mean a lot, but I just wonder if we're going to see the NASDAQ go into a bit of a sideways move, just a sort of sideways range for a while, you know, between its all-time high and a little bit below, like we tested a few days ago, and just see it go sideways for a bit, a typical sort of consolidation move. I think that would be quite likely.
It's possible. I think the interesting thing will be the stocks that's underneath the top 10, you know, that everyone always talks about, how they perform and whether there's any companies in that sort of, you know, 10 down to the 50, top 50, that actually accelerate across the board tech-wise to push the S&P 500 higher as such. Yeah. It's going to be very, very interesting. You're going to have to watch the sort of stocks that are above, or sorry, that fall below the standard moving average, Pete. Or the exponential moving average, and see how that does.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's one thing to keep an eye on regarding those sort of levels, mate.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I keep saying, and I know I get boring repeating it, but I'm still nervous about end of February, March sort of time. We so often get a sell-off then, and we're due one, because last year, the S&P 500, its biggest drop through the year was just 5%. That is historically very unusual. Normally, there's a drop of 10% or whatever. And I just feel that we're due for a bit of a kick. And, that springtime is always an iffy time. So that's my playbook. I'm sort of looking, you know, towards the end of February into March, I'll be looking to think, what do I want to top slice? What do I want to sell? Mm-hmm. You know, getting ready to hedge if I need to, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the other thing to put in the equation, Pete, is that the talking on both sides of the pond here about interest rates incrementally being pushed a little bit higher. So that could almost, you know, take the wind out of the sails of most markets in the US and the UK as well.
Yeah, it'll help banks.
We spoke about banks possibly having a good year this year already, didn't we? We spoke about Lloyd's, HSBC, Barclays standards already, possibly having a good year. It could well be the case, mate.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. So, yeah. So, mate, what other stuff do you want to roll on to?
I want to pause here and actually just bring people up to speed with what happened with the Twin Peaks Challenge, Pete. Get it over and
done
with.
So
we finished it officially on Sunday of a couple of days back. We did a last little push on it across the social media platforms, and we had a few more people added to it. We did extremely well. Got some very, very generous podcast listeners. So I just want to whistle through some of these individuals that that made a donation over the past 2 weeks. We had Witam Rocklaw made another donation of £25 plus £6.25 gift aid, and said, "Good work, well done." Terry made another donation for us.
Nice one.
"It is a pleasure to give something back for gaining market and investing knowledge. Thank you very much, and happy new year to Twin Peaks and Memphis, and take care." I made another donation in there as well. Another £100 and £125 gift aid. My words were, "A huge thank you to all those that supported this charity fundraise for disabled children supported by Memphis. Your kindness means more than you could ever imagine. Kindness matters. Inclusion matters." So that was £100, £25 gift aid. Claudio missed another curry night, and he wrote, "I missed another curry night, but I did have coffee with friends. So here's a final £30 plus contribution to the TPI challenge. Congratulations on the £20K raised for Memphis, a cause close to my heart. Respect. £30 plus £7.50 gift aid." Scott Porter, thank you very much. "Great work, guys. Here's another little bit towards your final total, £9 plus £2, £25 gift aid." John Marriott, "Appreciate the correction." That was John that I mentioned that corrected me on the FTSE being down at the time.
Oh, yeah.
He's on Twitter. His words are, "Appreciate the correction. Here's £10. So there you go.
Here's John. We should do more mistakes, and then John would pay us more £10.
I'm sure there's one or two on here as well, so he might be able to make a donation. Reluctant investor, thank you ever so much, mate. Another £100 and £125 gift aid. Katarina, our good friend at _MTAUS in Australia, donated $50. Thank you ever so much, Kat.
Awesome. I've no idea what that means, but brilliant.
Such an important cause. Glad to help where I can. Thank you. Steve at Laird Elmsky Robinson. We know Steve. I spoke to him recently. Yeah. My penalty for not listening to the last few episodes. Well done, guys, for supporting such a fantastic charity. £20 plus £5 gift aid.
Brilliant.
We had the lovely, adorable Annabelle Brody Smith from AIC made an anonymous donation, a very generous one. Thank you ever so much, Annabelle. Really appreciate your kindness there. Thank you.
Annabelle.
At Gamois, again, made another donation, £10 plus £2.50 gift aid. "Great cause and love the podcast. Thanks for passing the knowledge on and helping us inexperienced investors. Enjoy the general chat. Wheelies, interruptions, and conquers patience!" Exclamation mark.
I don't know what he means.
Oh boy, you do. At Scrumpy 222 made another donation. Thank you ever so much, Scrumpy. £5 plus £1.25. Phil Orchard, "Thanks guys for all your time and effort with the podcast. They don't just entertain, they really help, and you should be well proud of the donations raised for such an important cause. Thank you." That was £50 plus £12.50 gift aid. Finally, Kevin Investing 86 on Twitter. "Thanks, guys, for all your efforts. Really enjoy the podcast. Keep up the good work. Good on you doing your fundraising for a very good cause." And all of you lovely people, ladies and gents around the world who have made donations, have enabled us to raise £20,000, £589.19, plus £2,884.78 gift aid. Ladies and gents, we have raised over £23,000 with the amount of money donated and the event that I put on early part of this year with at Lemming Investor at Elric, and a lot of donations via Elric as well regarding the subscriptions that he gave, and lots of really, really great individuals that work for certain companies, such as the individuals that work at London Southeast, that work at ShareScope, that work at Poolbeg Pharma, Open Orphan, that made donations regarding the particular event that we did. Substantial amounts of money they donated to us because we put that event on. So I want to thank absolutely everybody that enabled us to raise that £23,000. That money is going to enable us to go away. I'm meeting with the people, the lead people at Memphis next Tuesday, and we're going to sit down and finalize what we're going to purchase with that bit of kit, with that money, and get a bit of kit for the unit. And once that's all organized, I will let you all know what we purchased or what you guys have purchased with the donations you've made. So thank you ever so much again, and God bless you all.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you to everyone. I mean, it's 23 grand. That's a damn good effort. I'm well impressed.
I'm well chuffed with that, mate. So fantastic. Absolutely blessed.
Pat yourselves on the back. Fantastic.
Absolutely. The beauty of us doing this now is that the idea that I've got going forward with regards to fundraising, and I spoke to Pete briefly about this, is that we're going to try and continue to do that. So I'm going to hand over the baton to Pete. And in 2022, Pete's going to find, that's Wheelie Dealer, by the way. Pete at Wheelie Dealer is going to choose a charity of his own, whether that's a local one or a national one. He's going to leave that and decide and come back to us as soon as he possibly can. And he's going to do his own challenge via the Twin Peaks podcast. And hopefully we can raise some money again for that particular charity, Pete. So how do you feel
Absolutely.
About that?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got a very good charity in mind, which is the Backup Trust, which is a spinal injury. I mean, I'm spinally injured. I'm a paraplegic, paralyzed at sort of chest level, and a wheelchair user. And these are a spinal injury charity that do, I mean, they basically cater for all ages, and they do like outward bound courses and just things like wheelchair skills and whatever to sort of teach people how to get used to life in a wheelchair and that kind of stuff. But the thing that really impresses me about Backup, I mean, the big thing about Backup is skiing. They're really big in disabled skiing. I did it myself once. Personally, didn't get on with it, but I can't stand the cold. So I was like, oh, this isn't for me. You know what I mean? Tamworth Snow Dome, I did it in. But anyway, they do a load of work with kids, and it's just fantastic because, you know, it's horrifying when you find out how many kids get spinal injuries or are born with spinal conditions. And they're in wheelchairs from, like, you know, 2 years old or from zero. I mean, it's just, it is horrendous. And kids who get paralyzed at 14, I mean, you just can't imagine. I mean, I was 33 when I was injured, and that's bad enough. Imagine being injured at 14, 15, 16. It must just be mentally so difficult, really must. So, yeah, so I'm going to get in touch with them and let's see what we can sort out.
Cool. I've got to say, we went in December to Tamworth Snow Dome. My daughter...
Praise him, man.
As she does. I was like, what do you want to do for your birthday? I want to do this, and I want to do this. And I said to my missus, what? She's never done any skiing before. Never, ever. Yeah. That's what she wanted to do on her birthday. So we went over there. Places, you're freezing, mate. You're like, I was wrapped up, mate. You know, I was wrapped up.
Well, I was.
Hat on, hoodie up, everything. Freezing. And she's going up and down, teaching her how to do this and pizza. She was there. But I think she had a 3 hour lesson instruction.
Oh, wow.
From beginning to end. So we just kept watching her from the thing and taking little pictures of her. She absolutely adores it. The problem is, now she adores it, Pete. We're going to have to keep going back.
Money.
And better at it. And then you're going to have to buy all the kit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And before we know it, she'll be there and say, on her 21st birthday, she wants to go to Biarritz or something daft like that. I'm like, oh, my God.
Swiss Alps, mate. Oh, don't. When I did it, it's quite clever because being paraplegic, you know, so I've got my hands and my arms and stuff. They put you in this thing called a mono ski, So it's like you sort of sit in it and your feet are outstretched in front of you and they're sort of like in another little sort of like box thing, whatever it is. And you're on a single ski and then you've got two little poles that you sort of push yourself around with and, you know, you go downhill. But it's all about balance. And I just got so frustrated because I kept falling over and I couldn't get myself back up. And they'd have to come and help get me back up, you know. But funny, it's called the backup charity. That's obviously why. But I kept falling over in it. So it's just, and with the cold, it just sort of drove me mental by the end of it. I was just,
it's
like,
a different sensation, isn't it? It's a different sensation. Oh. My daughter absolutely loved the experience. And we're going to be going back probably before the end of this month, actually.
Oh, I recommend anyone who's able-bodied or paraplegic or quadriplegic to give it a go, you know what I mean? And
I can see it becoming a regular fixture, mate, probably once every 2 weeks in the end, you know, month, then 2 weeks, and we'll see.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Do you want to do that poll thing you were on about, mate?
Yeah. So this was via, if I remember right, I think it was via Steve Holsworth, S. Holsworth. And there was basically a conversation being had. And I decided to just, because we were talking about, you know, frequency of, and all the rest of it, of people exiting their portfolios and the volatility and so on and so forth, Pete. So we ended up
looking, how often do you look at your portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So our good friend Steve had put this comment, and he was basically referencing some of the conversations we'd had in podcast 65.
Yeah.
And Steve retweeted it, and his comment was, when I worked 8 to 5 in an office, I'd be avidly checking the RNSs at 7 a.m. on the 148 bus to Victoria. Since taking early retirement in 2020, I rarely get out of bed before 9:30 a.m. My portfolio performance has rarely been better and it's much less stressful. Smiley face, sunglasses. And I thought, you know, that's a brilliant comment there, because the beauty of it is, I think the more time we have, and I mentioned about the supercomputer we had in our, you know, in our pockets and our desk.
We're walking around in your head. Yeah.
The phone, Pete. Yeah. We're looking at these apps all the time and going, oh, what's happening here and what's happening here? We look at it all the time. So I thought, you know what, maybe an idea to just find out how frequent people are looking at their portfolios, right?
Yeah.
So I wrote this question out, and it was, I replied to Steve and then I asked the question, that is very revealing indeed that your investing portfolio performance has increased since you stopped avidly checking it. Here is a question for all. Since the market's open for 2022, right? And bear in mind, we just had 2 trading days, Pete, right? Mm. So this is January the 5th I wrote this. Since the market's open for 22, how often have you looked at your portfolio or opened your portfolio? Yeah. No, not looked at all. More than once daily. More than twice daily. Or more than 4 times daily.
Now, more than 10 daily.
Yeah. More than 4 times daily. Have you seen the results of this already, Pete?
I haven't seen the results. No, I did see something.
I'll let you give your first feedback on this then. And I'll comment on it. So it went this way, right? No, not looked at all. This is 2 trading days in, okay? And over a couple of days after that, I left it running for 2 days. 11.3%. More than once daily, 26.1%. More than twice daily, 9.9%. More than 4 times daily, 52.7%.
Wow. Do you know, it's really interesting how little people have looked at it from my point of view, because I'm a devil for it. I must be looking. I use my phone. Yeah, I've got an app on my phone, and I must look at it. It wouldn't surprise me if I looked 25 times a day. It really wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, really wouldn't surprise me. And
why, Pete? Why?
You know, it's funny, right?
When you're not a person that sells, you don't sell anything.
I know. I don't buy anything either.
Why do you need to keep looking then?
I don't do anything. Do you know what? I'll answer that question directly. I have to consult my notes. There was a tweet that Jace, you know, our mate Jace at Stealth Surf, who people can hear on a previous Twin Peaks, he put out a tweet and it really stuck in my brain. And he said, active inactivity. And I thought, that sums up my approach. So it's like, I don't want to be continually buying and selling and churning my portfolio and whatever, yeah? And it's almost like I do loads of things to keep me busy to be doing other things than actually trading on my portfolio. And so that's the sort of thinking behind it. What you need to understand is what I'm actually doing, right? So I'm not opening up my trading account and saying, oh yeah, I'm £10 richer than I was an hour ago. You know, I'm not doing that. What I am doing is I'm really focused on significant moves on my portfolio. So a lot of my portfolio, I just look through it and some of it's like it's up 0.5% or it's flat or it's down 1%. It's just irrelevant noise, yeah? I'm just interested in when something's moved 2.5%, 3%, 4%. I'm then going in and looking at the chart pattern, looking at the candlesticks and thinking, right, is that breaking out? You know, because if it's breaking out, it often means it's going to go higher in subsequent days or whatever. And quite often I've got, because I look fairly frequently and I look at my charts at night and whatever, I've got these chart patterns in my brain. They're already like, you know, I could almost draw charts of any stock I hold. And it's like, I sort of know what to look for. So I can see a particular move and I'll be thinking, that's a new 52-week high. So I'll open it up, have a look. Yeah, I'm right. It's a 52-week high. So that then tells me this thing's goddamn bullish. It's probably going to go higher. And all that kind of looking informs my thinking as to when I get round to top slicing, if I get round to adding it, whatever I'm going to do. Yeah.
No, I get it. So you're looking for, breakouts. You're looking for signals, essentially, yeah. A bit like Jason talks about. Yeah,
exactly. If something's been falling, so say for instance, I got a stock and the goddamn thing keeps falling, right? If it's been falling 3-4 days, I'm then looking for hammer candles. Because if it puts in a hammer candle on a given day, and the thing is, you can start to tell early in the day from the moves it starts making, you can say, right, it's going to do a hammer today. You can be pretty sure. And then as you're checking through the day later and they go, oh yeah, it has done a hammer. And that gives you a very good sign that it's probably going to rally the next day. And it's like using the candlesticks and using these kind of sort of pattern recognition that you sort of train your brain to do gives you a very good feel as to what's going to happen next. I hate being caught out by the market. Nothing winds me up more. I love being in a situation where I wake up in the morning and I look at my phone to see how my stocks are doing. And I almost know before I've even looked what my stocks are going to have done. And it's when I'm caught out, when if I'm expecting stocks to rise and then I open it and the, you know, bloody market's fallen 4%, that's when I hate it. Do you know what I mean? When I've been caught out and I haven't seen something coming.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm going to read this, and it's a similar sort of thing that Henry Viola said at HT Viola. And he said, I'm a regular checker, but very patient actor. I can observe without needing to act, but may be unusual in that. And then Ben replied to him at Go Left Master, said, regular checker too, in brackets, not keen to change either, end of brackets. I'm working to reduce the action. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then we had good to be heard, constantly check portfolio and watch list, always looking for opportunities / issues and to get a feel for the current market behavior. Yes, I have a plan, but things change. A bit like a footy manager. He has a pre-game plan, but things change throughout the 90 minutes. He will tweak if necessary, which I think is a really, really, really good comment. I do a slight cheat, Pete. Right. I tend not to look at my portfolio. What I do in the morning I think I mentioned this before,
yeah,
is I'll open the London Stock Exchange and I'll just look at the RNSs, right? And then the next thing I do is I go to the page after about the first 15 minutes, half an hour, that tells me the largest losers for the whole of the all share index and the largest losers for the AIM. And I look at those two pages, right? And if I see a stock of mine in there, I'll investigate. And if not, I'll go off, I chill out, I do whatever I want, and I come back to the markets a bit later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if none of my stocks are in there and imploded or the RNS has come out and it's a profit warning, I'm like, another day, I can just chill out. I can just get on with other things, focus on the things. And I come back and start looking at the markets a bit later on. But I tend not to look at my portfolio unless there's a big change on a stock or a big piece of news that moves the stock up 5%. And it's got to be one of my most significant weighted stocks, not one of my small stocks that I've only got 1.5%, maybe 2% in.
You know, it's sort of irrelevant. Yeah.
It's not that it's, I mean, it's not that it's irrelevant because the 2% size of what it's actually valued at right now is a significant amount for me.
Well, in the big picture, you get what I'm saying.
If it was AstraZeneca and it came out and it's down 5%, I'd be thinking, let me just have a look at what impact that's had on the portfolio. Are you with me?
You'd be selling the car.
so that's how I try and do a cheat, but I don't tend to look at the whole value of the whole portfolio in every single stock. But that's just me. And maybe that's my cheat's way out.
Yeah. Just interesting because with the RNSs, I mean, it's similar to what Steve Holdsworth was saying. What I used to do was, you know, 7 o'clock before, you know, you're on the RNSs, whatever. And I thought about, well, this is an absolute waste of time. You know, what I do now, I don't even wake up till 8 o'clock. You know, it's like, what is the point? Why wake up at 7 when I can read it at 8 and I've got another hour of nice, important sleep and important rest that you know, which probably helps. An hour extra asleep probably helps my trading performance a lot more than being on the RNS is dead on 7 o'clock. Because, you know, if there is a profit warning or something, so often the price has moved by the time you get to be able to deal with it anyway. So, you know, what is the point? It's almost better to be perfectly relaxed, perfectly slept and, you know, in good mental shape and to make a rational, cold, sensible, balanced judgment rather than at 7 o'clock. Dead on 8, panicking to get the damn thing sold when perhaps you don't even need to, you know. So it just you make
a really good point there, Pete. And it goes back to what I was saying before about mindfulness and meditation and staying calm, being calm when the markets are going in your favor and calm when the markets aren't. And we see the markets open so often at 8:05 and it's something's plunged 5, 10, 20, 30%. And you're going, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then you come back in the afternoon and it's down 5% or 3% or much half what it, you know, it blinked at in the morning, and some of them recover in the afternoon. You're going, oh my gosh. And you can see people on Twitter going, oh, I sold this morning first thing and now it's recovered. And equally, you know, you think, okay, it's recovered, you buy it in the afternoon and it then crashes in the afternoon, you know, in the latter part of the afternoon. So I think sometimes just being composed and watching the markets and just not reacting and chasing it, it's just eases. I think it was that piece of research, I'm sure it was Harvard or one of the banks, I forget who it was now, was saying that the best investors that they found, you know, choose my words carefully now, were people that were no longer around, because they never looked at the portfolio for the last 50 years. They weren't around to actually look at them, and they had the best performance of most investors. You know what I mean? It's bizarre. Not titivating with it, not adding, not subtracting, not, you know, chasing, not, you know, new trends, hot stocks. Just bought that stock or that portfolio of stocks and had not done anything for 30 years and then beaten the market.
You know, so often I see someone on Twitter or some investing guru or whatever, so often they'll say, you know, in a given year, my portfolio was up 18% or whatever they were, yeah? And then they say, oh, as a little exercise, I went back and looked at all the trades I'd done. And if I hadn't actually done any of those trades, I'd now be up 23%. The number of times I've heard that or read that, it's just unbelievable. And I think But I mean, it really depends on what you want to do, on your personality, on your lifestyle, on what you want to do with your life. Yeah. And yeah, some people want to be day traders. Some people want to be short term traders. And obviously they need to be looking at it and on it and whatever. But I think for a lot of long term investors, I think a lot of us, it's almost like we chase and work hard to get a 26% gain on a year. And actually, if we hadn't bothered with most of that farting around, we probably could have achieved 21% anyway, which is still a blooming good, damn excellent year. And we could have been down the pub or seeing our mates or going skiing in the snow dome, just doing something a lot more goddamn useful, you know? Life's too short. That's the big lesson.
I think
COVID, the whole miserable experience of the last 2 years has really taught us this, that, you know, life is too short. The clock is ticking. I know so many of our listeners are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever. You know, your days are getting more. There aren't as many around, you know.
We've
got to make the most of it, you know.
Yeah, life's for enjoying, which is what I said to you. I want to get back to doing stuff, mate. I want to go on my holidays outside of the UK. You know, I want to do all of that without all these different restrictions and tests needed and blah 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 blah. I want to do all of that. So yeah, let's just see. And you're right. You know, I want to be enjoying my life, you know, as best possible. Exactly. Right, Pete. Conscious we've not really talked about any stocks, mate. So where do you want to start?
Well. Yeah, you mentioned on the last podcast that we will come up with you. And I'll kick us off with one that I sort of like warmed up to yesterday, funnily enough.
Okay.
And that is Bytec, BTC. Yeah. And it's one I've held in the past and I, you know, did all right on it. And I remember it went through a difficult period two or three years ago, I think. But, you know, so many small caps have this sort of roller coaster over time, don't they? But the interesting thing is that they specialize in camera equipment. And they used to be a sort of, you know, they had three divisions. One of them used to be things like selling tripods in Jessops and things like that. And they'd have bits doing specialty camera filters or something, you know, whatever. But they also had like a part that was very much about broadcasting and production and sort of high-end expensive cameras, yeah? Anyway, that was the kind of thing they did. But what was really interesting was, I'm pretty sure the update from yesterday said they were trading ahead of expectations. But the bit that really hit me was there was some text in that update, and it said, since the pandemic and with advances in technology and whatever, and the whole way that people are changing how they work and stuff, the market that they supply, as in visual content, has ballooned massively. The demand has really increased. So it's things like podcasts and, you know, obviously that's audio, but from the video side, it was things like social media influencers and more music things and independent filmmakers and God knows what else that needs professional video equipment. One of the things they said was that because more stuff, just like normal things you can buy, consumer items, whatever, because more stuff is going online, it needs professional cameras to take photos of it that then go on the website. And if you think about it, it makes sense. So a lot of their high-end professional stuff is in demand. Now, what's interesting as well that they did yesterday, I think they announced it, they've just acquired an audio company as well. Professional audio, like an American company. So they can now supply, you know, audio visual AV. So I just think that's a really interesting story, and it could have a lot of growth potential. when you look at how companies like Midwich, MIDW, who are big in AV, you look how well they've done over recent years. And it really looks like the market is coming to them, you know?
Yeah, you make a good point there. And like you say, there's a lot of tech out there needed. Lots of people using and filming themselves, like you say, the influencers. And also, Pete, what's happening now is that these companies that can't go to these exhibitions are having to set up and hire equipment to film themselves in their HQs.
Bang on.
They can't physically attend these events.
A lot of that,
and people, I spoke to a guy, I think it was December-ish, and he's put in a little mini studio in his HQ regarding his firm.
Wow.
You know, so you know, SMEs are doing it, so large caps are doing it as well. So there's a nice sort of push regarding that, you know, and
like a big change.
Yes, it's starting up. So it's quite an interesting
It's like a big
situation going on there.
A big sort of societal change and a big sort of like working life change and a big technological change that's enabling it because we've got the bandwidth and the power to do these things now that we couldn't have done 5 years ago even, you know? Looking on SharePad, it's showing us forecast PE 19.9 and then two-year forecast PE of 16.6. And you're picking up forecast yield 2.2%, rising to 2.5%. It looks like it's got a bit of borrowing, but from memory, it's not a big issue. I think it looks for the growth. I mean, it's not cheap. You wouldn't describe that as cheap, but I think it's reasonable value. One, you could buy it, tuck it away, and chances are I'd probably do all right.
Okie dokie. What I spotted the other day, Pete, and I'm not sure we've mentioned this company before because it's relatively new. Is one called, and again, a tech company. It's called Big Technologies. Have we spoken about that before?
Big, is that like Byte?
No, B-I-G.
Yeah, oh, sorry. No, I don't know that one, mate. What's that? No.
So that IPO'd back in July of last year.
Right.
And basically, it's the UK-based remote people monitoring technology, Pete. Yeah. So they placed the price at £2 a share, raised 200 mil, and basically off they trotted. But what was interesting, Pete, was the fact that I think I'm gonna just get this right now because Chief Technology Officer. So the guy that's left in charge of this big technology company,
yeah.
He decided to just make his first investment of the company and waded in with 63K, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's always nice to see them starting to make that embracing the company as such. And the beauty of this is that, you know, we're always talking about the situation where people are having their movements restricted or checked or whatever. We talk about tagging them, Pete.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here. Remote people monitoring technology companies. That's what they do. So I think that might be an interesting company to research going forward. You can't get loads of stats on it and metrics on it, but because it's only been around for a little while. But it's one to investigate. And the ticker symbol is BIG.
I'm actually surprised because I just looked on SharePad quickly and it is showing some numbers. So it's showing forecast.
Go for it. You just fire those numbers out there, mate. Go on.
Yeah, it's got forecast PE 61.7. And then two-year forecast PE 53.3 appears to have quite a bit of cash, so that's handy. Obviously, it's on a high rating, but tech stocks are often on some pretty meaty ratings. I mean, I would guess. I mean, I could look further and get more details, but we'll leave listeners to do that. I would guess it's based on just one or two analyst forecasts. It might even be just the one where those numbers have come from. And obviously, if the growth is powerful, then a forward PE of 53 can quickly be a forward PE of 40, can quickly be a forward PE of 20. So you know, if the growth is there, and at the end of the day, tech is all about growth, if the growth is there, it could be really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be covered by criminal justice. remote care and digital health. So people that are living on their own but may be vulnerable, you can just track them or monitor them whilst they're in their own home, and also at care homes as well, and in hospitals, NHS. So that's the reason why I thought that might be an interesting one to investigate a bit further forward going on.
You know, I'm just having a quick look again on SharePad, because one of the great things with SharePad is when you've got a fairly new company like this, and obviously there's not so much information around, quite often if you look on, how do you find it? It's under the financials tab, which is on the right-hand side of the screen, if you see what I mean, and go and you can look under like the income, which is effectively the P&L. You've got the balance sheet and all sorts of things there. Anyway, under the income one on this particular stock, it has got some good history. So it's got like 19 million of turnover in 2019 and then 29 million of turnover in 2020 and then 34 million of turnover in 2021. So even though, I mean, looking at the numbers, it's losing money, which quite often they are at this stage of development. That's growing fast on those revenue numbers, you know, and then it's forecasting 36 million, which, to be honest, looks light. It's then forecasting a year out to 43 million and then 52 million. So there's good information, you know, being produced on it, obviously from brokers and obviously the historic what it's achieved. So I like the fact it's a tech IPO that's actually got some history. You've got 3 years of history there. So often, you know, I get so blinking annoyed with these AIM junk stocks that are just literally started last week and then they're listed this week, and that's just useless. Just does my nut. And people think these are great stocks. They're not. They're mostly garbage. So
we have. I'm not going to name names, but we've had quite a few IPOs of last year that have rolled over significantly, mate. And a lot of people are sitting deep underwater as a consequence of it. So yeah, we're going to have to be mindful of that.
I'm conscious, Pete, that valuation, you know.
Yeah, I'm conscious that, and we're going to have to do it on the next podcast, possibly. I was going to review my portfolio as well, so I need to do that
on the next one.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
But one of the things I was talking about in the last one was the fact that of stocks that I couldn't go back to buy, or I'd made a mistake on.
Oh.
And I spoke about Reach. And the second one that happened with was Future, another digital media company. And I made quite a significant amount of money on that particular share and then sold it.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously the market capitulated back in March of 2020. And I didn't go back into that stock. So that was another one that I let slide and just carried on climbing, and it's sitting near highs again. But I think the lesson that I've learned over the past few years is not to be scared of going back into stocks. And that's what I'm trying to say to people, just review and keep reviewing stocks. And I'd also, I think one of the lessons that I learned last year, especially with the main corporate being 4D Pharma, is to be mindful when lots of people buy the stock that you're in. I thought I was in relatively early, and the share price zoomed from my purchase price of 36 pence all the way up to 180. All the Reddit crew, all the bulletin board people in the US and the UK jumped on a stock, and it absolutely flew when it listed on the NASDAQ. And then it's carried on rolling over, and everyone's going, I don't believe it's back at £1. I don't believe it's set back at 80p. I don't believe it's all the way down, mate, back to sub 50p. I'm still holding it, Pete. So what's my error there? You know, I'm always looking at the fundamentals and I'm always looking at the technicals. And what I find best with my stocks, two things, right? Buy the stock, don't mention it, right? when I want to mention it, put out the contract note, right? Because if no one knows about it, they can't talk about it, right? Yeah. However, I have been using the technicals, Pete, and the same thing happened with Loop. Got spanked, went up and came back down to earth and crashed, walloped, right? 4D Farmers done exactly the same. Yeah. 36 up to 180, now it's in the 40s today. I've not even looked at it today to know the price. And it's like, well, where's it going to go from here? It's got all this news and all the pipeline and microbiome, this, that, and the other, and all the different places it's going to be sitting in you know, COPD and all the rest of it. All of it's there. The pipeline's there to just go whoosh, and it could be a 10 bag or a 100 bag. All these different things, and all these things have been shouted out about it. Hmm. But none of that matters unless the company actually executes and generates revenue or gets contracts with this person and that person and gets that to phase three. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to deliver. FDA approve it. None of it matters, Pete. Yeah. So I got in early, should have taken some money off the table when it got ahead of itself. And this is it. If a stock gets overvalued, have the strength and resilience and the objectivity and the integrity to go, you know what? Let me just take a bit off the table. Don't worry about the people on Twitter trolling you going, why have you sold out? You can't sell out. You said this. Just do what is your money. Do what you want to do, right? I'm sitting at it now, 36 to 180, done nothing with it, and it's back to where, almost back to where I started with it. Yeah. Who's the idiot? Who's the clown? Me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of links to the conversation we were having early, you know? It's like, yeah, I have this obsession with looking at my stocks probably far too often. But the thing is, when I see something like that happening in my account, my brain is thinking, I'm going to need to top slice this at some time. And I'm really on it in terms of that top slicing, you know? And I'm looking at the valuation and I'm thinking, has this now run too far? Is this now too big a position in my portfolio? Was I comfortable holding however many grand of this stock? Am I comfortable holding however many grand more? And quite often I'm just not. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to slice the load off. I might, you know, take out my initial stake, whatever I'm going to do. But I think you're right, man. Top slicing is absolutely the way to go when you've had these big successes, you know. It's like we get greedy, isn't it?
I think so. I think the thing is, if you've got a stock, which this is the problem. We've got this conversation about, can you over research a stock, right? Yeah. So I've researched 4D Pharma to the yin yang, yeah? And I got to the point
in love.
Okay. No, I didn't fall in love. I just needed to know that the technology that they had and the pipeline that they had longevity, that at some point or other, they're going to get some of this potential out there, right?
Yeah.
And what would that mean? If they got 3 out of 10 or 5 out of 10, this is a 4, 5, 10 pound company per share. Right. Yeah. I'm here, but able to buy it at 36 pence because nobody wants it. Right. Mm. And then everybody's buying it and it's already at £1.80. That should have been, Pete, wake up, smell the coffee, get some off the table now and just see where it goes. And if it goes higher, great. And if it rolls over, you can buy some more back at a pound or 80 pence.
Yeah.
You know, and I've made that classic mistake of, you know, just being lazy with it, thinking, you know what, I bought this with a view of it being at £3 or £4 in 2022, 23, 24, 25, whatever, and higher. So I'm just going to sit it out and wait it out. And sometimes you've got to be a bit more proactive because some of that potential may never, ever materialize, Pete. That's the other thing.
Yeah, that's the exact problem. Do you know,
management may not execute. All that pipeline might mean nothing at all.
Yeah.
We've seen other biotech companies go up, come down, and then go away. Is that going to happen to 4D? I sincerely hope not, but I don't know.
No, that makes sense, man. Something else that I've meant to mention on many podcasts and we've never got around to, but it's going to feed in lovely here, right? You mentioned a little bit, you know, a few seconds ago or minutes ago about how DDDD could be a multi-bagger, yeah? And, you know, maybe it can be, yeah? But something that struck me the other day was that I think a lot of us chase multi-baggers. I know there's a certain personality type that absolutely loves multi-baggers. There's nothing better, yeah? you know, if you can get a 10 times, you can get a bagger, it's absolutely amazing, awesome, fantastic, yeah? But I think we need to think about what that really means, right? And it's like, are you better off chasing multi-baggers and getting loads of 8 times winners or 12 times winners or 5 times winners or whatever, yeah? Are you better off doing that? Or are you actually better off focusing on the compound annual growth rate, the CAGR, of your portfolio? And I think there's an argument to be made that the more important thing, rather than chasing individual baggers and being obsessed by getting a bagger, if you get a 20 bagger, but it's taken you 50 years to achieve it, the actual CAGR, the compound annual growth rate, is actually going to be really low. That's an extreme example. But so my point is that you could have a stock that becomes a multi-bagger, is up 7 times or something, but you might have held it for 8 years, and for maybe 5 of those years, it did absolutely nothing or it fell. So it was actually hurting your returns for 5 or 6 years before it suddenly came fantastically good and you got this amazing multi-bagger. So I think it's more important to think about I look at it as CAGRs versus baggers. And I think CAGRs are more important than baggers are. Did that make sense?
I agree with you to a certain extent. The CAGRing of your portfolio and the compounding of your portfolio is very, very important, Pete. I agree with that. I think what happens with me, and I've explained this to people before, is that I have my core holdings. Everyone knows what my core holdings is. It's boring to talk about it. And that's where the significant portion of my portfolio is. I do a really, really, really big piece of research on almost every other stock that I buy.
Yeah.
And then I have a 2% and up to a 4% position in other stocks. And when I buy them new, they can go up to a maximum of 4%. Yeah, I'm buying and selling stuff as something gets taken over, because I've got a lot of stuff that's recovery stocks, and then when they recover to a certain extent, I'll do that top slicing, trimming, and then selling, like I've done with ITV in the past. So, you know, for instance, so you're saying about baggers, Pete.
Yeah.
What carried my portfolio this year was Lake Resources, and I spoke about Lake before.
Yeah.
At one stage during the year, it was up 1900%.
Yeah,
during that calendar year.
Awesome.
But it ended up being up just shy of 1350, so 1350% up for the in the calendar year, from the 1st of January to the 31st of December.
Incredible. Yeah?
So that was a 3.5% position.
Yeah,
that goes up 13-fold. So you can imagine what that's done to my portfolio, and what AstraZeneca being up 14-15% ish for the whole year.
Yeah,
and the other things that doubled for me, right? But what concerns me was not the winners, because and the baggers of that was my CAGR, but also the most important bit, Pete, was the mistakes that I made, which I've already talked about before.
Yeah,
I shouldn't be making those. What I see for myself are elementary mistakes, Pete.
Yeah,
when something gets ahead of itself, takes them off the table. It doesn't matter whether or not you're looking 2022, 23, 24. If it gets ahead of where it should be, it takes them off the table.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and Lake might be there ahead of its time now. I don't know. I haven't taken anything off the table there. So I might have to consider that as something to do.
Yeah.
But it's about the fact that every single day of the week, we should be looking at our portfolios and the value of it. We should be looking at a book and reading more and trying to get and improve. And that's what I'm trying to do every day. I'm reading every day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm trying to get better. It's not about me chasing more money. It's just that I want to get better at doing this.
Well, it's what we always say, isn't it? That it's about the art of investing. If you get the art right, the money will come. You don't need to worry about the money, because that comes along as a byproduct. And it's interesting what you said there about how it was an elementary error. I wouldn't necessarily put it as an elementary error. I would perhaps frame it as an avoidable error. You know, you could have rules.
I'm not sure that's more polite, Pete. I feel wounded, but you're spot on. You are spot on.
Yeah.
Sorry, you are correct, mate. It was avoidable.
Totally insult you there. You know,
I'm taking it, mate, because that's exactly what it was avoidable.
Yeah.
You know, when you've read everything around a company, and it comes out with a 4:35, 5 o'clock p.m. Profit warning.
Yeah.
That's not avoidable. You know what I mean? Everything the company said was great, and then it's profit warnings. You can't avoid those sort of things. It just happens. Happens to all of us.
That'll happen, but what you could do is top slice before that profit warning. So if you'd let the position get...
How do you know a profit warning is coming? You don't.
No. What I mean is, right, so say, for instance, you buy a company and it has good results, and it goes up and does really, really well, yeah? At some point, you've got to top slice, top chop a bit of that off. And then when the profit warnings come, it won't hurt you as much as it would have done. Do you see what I mean?
I get that. But there is that argument about running your winners as well, though, Pete. Sometimes you've got to let them run. Because top chopping does erode your profitability of your long-term holds.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's funny.
So it's a difficult one.
Talking about the baggers and caggers, the example you gave of your lithium stock, which is absolutely awesome, I would say that's an unusual one. I think to get a 1900 or 1300% return in 1 year is difficult to do. And you've done brilliant to get that. Do you know what I mean?
It's an outlier, Pete. It doesn't happen that often. I've had others that have done the similar sort of amount. But not in a year. I've had a few, and I've had a few takeovers that have and stocks that recovered from the lows of 2020 to give me a couple hundred percent here, there, and everywhere. Yeah. And it's an outlier. But that's now sitting almost as my joint second largest holding in my whole portfolio, Pete. And it's only been in my portfolio since September of 2018.
What you're telling me is that you've got a big position relative in your portfolio in a stock that has no control over its end pricing.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll leave that with you.
I am telling you that. And you know what's worse with it, Pete? What's worse with this lithium stock? It's that it's generating bugger all revenue. It hasn't dug any lithium out and sent anything anywhere yet. It's all about partnerships and offtake agreements and so on and so forth. There's another stock called Vulcan.
Yeah.
That's up, I can't even think of the percentage now, over the last 2 years, almost double that amount because of clean lithium. And again, that's not generated any revenue because it's all about electric vehicles. There's not being enough lithium to actually put in these batteries.
Yeah.
So once the offtake agreements are had and they start to mine this in 2023 and 24, you know, it's like, this is the new oil, right? You know, some of these stocks are potentially going to be as big as BP, Royal Dutch Shell, allegedly. I don't know the truth of the matter, or big as Rio and BHP.
And we've got to bear in mind that, I mean, one of the things I'm noticing is that when you look at stocks coming onto the market, I'm noticing more and more lithium plays. It's starting to happen more and more. And there will come a point, you know, we're probably several years away from it yet, I hope, or whatever. There will come a point where there is abundant lithium supplies because
Pete, there'll be abundant companies listed that are related to lithium, but the abundant supply is not going to be there, mate. There's a complete disconnect. We'll get Claudio on here to talk about it at some point, or one of the managers. But there'll be a disconnect between now and 2030, 2035 regarding the amount of lithium needed and the exponential growth of electric vehicles. That's the disconnect. There'll be loads of lithium companies. Whether or not they've got the right minds and right locations,
they're digging it.
Completely different thing, mate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I suppose what I want to say about all of this, and just round this off, is that this year will mark 30 years of me learning and being investing, right? And I'm still making elementary mistakes. Avoidable mistakes. And I need to get better, and I will do. And that's what courses through my veins every day. It's not about more money. It's about, I need to get better at this. What am I seeing there? What am I looking at there? Why didn't I see that? Well, that's interesting. I'm not looking necessarily for new stocks and looking for the next, you know, tip by Simon Thompson. I'm not interested in that. You know, in fact, I would prefer him not to tip my shares anymore, because they go up and then come straight back down again after a week and a half, because the traders have jumped in on the merry bandwagon and then sold them again. Yeah. I want my stocks to be left alone. Yeah, I buy them, I'll put them out on Twitter when I'm good and ready, and I'll put the contract notes out so no one can say, oh, where does that come from? And people going, oh, but you bought that ages ago. Why are you telling us about it now? Because that's what I'm free to do what I want to do with it, you know? And the stock was there for you to research as well, and to have found it on your own as well. So yeah, absolutely. Get on with it.
No, it's funny because the thing that strikes me about, you know, the elementary mistake is that the way...
No, start calling me Watson and you call yourself Holmes. Is that where we're going with this?
Yeah, we'll have to change the podcast to like the detective's website. Bloodhound website, Bloodhound podcast. Right, yeah. Anyway,
get on with it.
Yeah, what you could do is, I'm going into Greek mythology now, is the old Ulysses Pact. So what you do is you create rules that stop you doing something that's not so good. So what you could do is create a rule and say, whenever I buy, you know, a speculative high-risk stock, as soon as I'm up 300%, I sell a third of my position. When it gets to a 500% gain, I sell another third of my position or whatever. So you create rules in advance and you then follow those rules strictly.
Yeah, and it goes back to that adage, Pete, of being extremely disciplined.
Don't do that, mate. We don't do that.
Yeah, and that is what is needed, mate. That is what's needed. A lot of discipline, mate.
Exactly. Wait, we got time for another stock.
Yeah, let me just do this quick one, because I promised I was going to talk about an overseas stock. And the reason why this one's come on my radar is because back in the day I had SAB. Remember SAB, Pete?
Miller.
Before he got taken over the alcohol company.
Yeah, booze.
This booze. One's called Brown-Forman. Alcoholic beverage. The ticker symbol is BF.A on the New York Stock Exchange. Yeah, it's a very, very large company. Ended up last year with £4.5 billion in revenue. And it's sitting at the moment, Pete, near its, I think it's near 52-week lows. So I've got the range here. The 52-week range is $60.73, $76.15. Market cap at $31 billion, pays a tiny little yield. Over the past year, 12 months, it's down 12%. And it's got me looking at it and thinking, you know, it's got a portfolio of premium brands. One we'll definitely know, most people know about, is Jack Daniels. And it's heading more and more towards taking advantage of the premiumization side of things, Pete.
Yeah.
And obviously with the bars and some of the restaurants in America being closed and around the world, it's impacted their revenue a little bit. And obviously travel and the retail side of business, people are drinking less. But I think I'm not sure that's been offset by people drinking at home. So the numbers that came out in October, it were basically slightly below market expectations, and the stock price has carried on drifting since then.
Right.
Yeah. But there's growth in developed markets and there's growth in the emerging markets. And hopefully once the travel retail side of things open up again, they'll start to accelerate the profit margins again. They generate loads of free cash flow. And it's just a behemoth company. And I personally think it's one of them which will either get bought by somebody else or they'll be engaged in a merger. And sitting at near a 52-week low, I think there's an opportunity there for that stock. So I haven't bought it yet. I have got my eye on it. But I think it's an interesting stock if somebody's looking for a US stock that's not a tech-related stock.
Yeah,
but a consumer. And it goes back to, will people keep drinking? I think, you know, what do people do when the stress in the markets or in their life? They smoke, they drink, they party. So that's one I've got my eye on.
No, that's an interesting one. I just having a very
does quick... it come up? Does it come up on ShareScot, by the way, Pete? Can you find it on
it
there?
It does. It does have American stocks, but what it's showing is a historic PE of 37. It's not showing forecast PEs. Now, my hunch is because that is probably because the company hasn't given guidance. You get getting this situation a lot when you get these companies that are just so uncertain as to what their market is doing because of lockdowns and God knows what else. A lot of them are not giving guidance, so the analysts aren't doing forecasts. And I'm seeing it a lot. So, I mean, there is the historic information. While I'm on it, just mention it very fast. For ShearPad users out there in listener land, one of the things that I've sort of tripped over recently is this summary page, which is like, it's on the right-hand side of the screen. And when you press, it's like a little picture of a sort of A4 document or something. You press the summary page and it comes up and it has the chart and it says Brown-Forman Corp. And you scroll down and it has like loads of stuff on it. And I find that quite an interesting, I'm looking at the wrong share. It says this is not a primary share for this company. So I'm obviously looking at the wrong one. But if you look at that summary screen, it's pretty good and worth having a nose. It's a fairly new feature that's come up.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's near the lows, Pete. It's going to the premiumization side of things.
Yeah.
It's got its bourbons. It's got its tequilas. I'm sure most people have heard of Woodford Reserve in a sense of one of the brands.
Right.
And I just think it's interesting. I think there's that sort of thing which either consolidate or when the market's open again and pre all the different names we've got for Omicron, COVID and all the rest of it. I just think it could do quite well. I could be proven wrong. Anyway, it's a research idea, not a tip, not a recommendation. I don't give tips and recommendations.
So check it out.
Pete, one last knock and then we're going to have to say bye-bye, mate. We've been in nearly an hour and a half.
Hour and a half? Right.
Nearly.
Right. This is one that sort of came up for me, I don't know, a week ago or whatever it was. Just looks really interesting. I got a horrible feeling about this, actually, mate.
I got a feeling
you might hold it.
Listen, before you say it, I'm going to say this now. In 2022, even if you say my stock, I'm not going to declare it.
No. Right, let's do that then. So let's, right, okay. This stock, I'm waiting to see the expression on
the drum.
We're actually using, I don't know if you've noticed any difference in the recording. Right, he's telling me not to mention it, so I won't mention it. You can make your own inference. Right, anyway, where were we? That has so thrown me. That's funny. Right, lookers, right? What struck me back, so it's a car retailer, yeah?
Yeah, know it.
And as you may have spotted, car retail is coming out with much better figures than anyone would have expected. I mean, it is actually quite astonishing how well they're doing. A lot of it is the used car businesses are doing so well. But it's been really surprising. Anyway, the thing that stands out about Lookers, which is LOOK, is that the property is valued, and it's in their latest update, the property is valued at 77 pence. So that's all the showrooms, and that is worth 77 pence, yeah? The price today is 74.5p. So you can actually buy it today for less than the value of its property. And that's before you talk about the business, the value of the cars, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And
so you're essentially getting the dealership and the cars for free.
Totally. Well, you're getting the whole business, everything for free, basically. I mean, it's just nonsense. Wow. Right. There's no big. Oh, I'm still looking at goddamn BFA, which is not the one I wanted to be looking at. I'm like all over the place today. I really am. Let me just bang it into the old tablet. Right. Lookers. Right. So it's on a forecast PE. This is nuts. It's on a forecast PE of 4.3. It's on a 2-year forecast PE of 6.9. You're getting a forecast yield of 2.4%. The 2-year going out is 3.4%. I mean, you know, it just looks
incredibly cheap to me. So I just noticed that people need to look into it. It's got net borrowing and it says 500 million. Something a bit spurious about that. So people need to look at that and understand what's going on there. And maybe that makes my whole argument completely worthless, but that's the whole point. We throw up the ideas, listeners need to look into them. But I just think it looks a really interesting one.
The market cap, I'm looking at on the stock exchange, Pete, is saying 293.9 million at the moment. 52-week low of 22 pence.
Yeah.
And it closed today at 74.5. And the recent high, I think, of 76, 77 pence was the high only just recently. So just rolling over just now, starting to roll over, but only slightly. I'm going to put up the 5-year chart and see where it's been. The 5-year chart.
It's made a 1-year high, which is bullish behavior.
Yeah, very 1 year. Yeah, yeah. Of 129 back in June 2017. Pre-COVID sell-off was at 64.5 pence. Went to a low or thereabouts of 10, 11 pence. So it's up sevenfold almost, Pete, from the lows of March 2020. So it's come a long way. Yeah. But like you say, the profitability has increased because everyone seems to be buying cars. You know?
Exactly. I mean, it looks an interesting one. I don't hold it. I mean, I don't hold anything we've talked about today.
It's not one I hold, but as I said last time, I've got my eye on one of them in the market.
Damn.
You didn't guess it this week, mate. No. I don't hold any retailers in the car trade at the moment, Peter. But I have got my eye on one.
Okay.
And when it falls into my price zone, I'll consider it, but it hasn't fallen into the price zone yet. And the likelihood is, given that everyone's still buying cars, it ain't going to come back to my price zone. So, or my buy zone, should I say.
Classic.
So we shall see.
No, it's interesting stuff. Interesting stuff.
You just want to call them out, don't you? Like, I think this is one of the peaks.
I just love the challenge.
Stocks. You do.
Any hints you give me, I'm going to be on them, mate.
Yeah, I know you are, mate. I know you are. Right. Dear. Ladies and gents, we hope you enjoyed that little global journey of investing that Pete and I have just took you on. US, Australia, Argentina, where Lake is, and others. And also talking about alcohol, which we seem to do a lot of late on this podcast. Yes. And by the way, I'm still eating mince pies. I've got enough in the cupboard to last me at least 3 weeks, Pete.
Wow. Yeah,
my little tummy is getting rounder by the day, but my weakness is mince pies. And I will carry on eating until they're done. I won't be buying any more, but I'm still eating mince pies. So, ladies and gents, this is a wrap for Twin Peaks Investing podcast number 66. We hope you enjoyed it. Thank you all, as per usual, for your feedback. If you've got anything you want to share with us, good, bad, indifferent, please share it on Twitter with us. If you enjoyed this podcast, whatever platform you're on, please subscribe so you get it automatically. And you probably get it before everyone else as well. So please keep on sharing and telling us what you like and don't like. Retweet it, share it with your friends. If you found something interesting about this podcast, probably one of the people that follow you on Twitter or elsewhere will probably find it interesting as well. So please share it with others. Pete, absolutely. Closing points you want to make?
No, mate. I mean, that we pretty much covered it. I think my brain is completely shutting down now after an hour and however long we've been talking. And I can only concentrate for about 10 minutes and then I'm done. So cool. So you've had my fired up 10 minutes somewhere in this conversation. And I hope everyone has a great few weeks before the next podcast and speak to whenever. Thanks for listening.
Cool. Thank you very much, everybody. Take care. God bless and keep yourself safe. And if you can find somewhere out there to go and enjoy yourself and do a little bit for somebody else, please do so. Until then, take care. Stay safe. All the very best from us. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
This Twin Peaks Investing podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.